For a while, it felt like business as usual. Players had reported to spring training, Grapefruit and Cactus League games were being played, the regular season was just a couple of weeks away. And then, everything stopped.
We have more breaking news this Thursday afternoon from the world of Major League Baseball to delay the 2020 opening day by at least 2 weeks. It goes on to say Major League Baseball will continue to evaluate these ongoing events, as will we.
The 2020 season is one baseball fans will never forget. We take a look back at the strangest season in baseball history. I'm Dan Schulman, and this is A Swing and a Belt. There were a lot of questions heading into 2020, but they were all of the normal baseball variety. Would Mookie Betts help push the Dodgers over the top? Could Gerrit Cole perhaps do the same for the Yankees? And how bad would it be for the Astros this season with crowds flocking to ballparks just to boo them for the sign-stealing scandal that was exposed over the offseason? But then, in a matter of days, all of those storylines became trivial.
At this time yesterday, Major League Baseball officials were saying that they not only were planning on continuing spring training and starting the regular season on opening day, March 26th, but that they plan to do so with fans in attendance. To see what has happened now, regular season delayed by 2 weeks, spring training games canceled. It's been an incredible turn of events in a short period of time.
The sport, like just about everything else in our lives, was on hold for who knew how long. Players dispersed. Some from Latin American countries who couldn't get home hunkered down in motels in their spring training towns. No one knew if there would even be a season at all. As days became weeks and weeks became months, the possibility of a shortened season appeared. That is, if the sport could navigate its way through COVID protocols and if the players and owners could come to terms on how to split up drastically reduced revenues. Amazingly, the latter appeared to be the bigger obstacle for a while.
It's just a disaster for our game. Absolutely no question about it. It shouldn't be happening, and it's important that we find a way to get past it and get the game back on the field for the benefit of our fans.
Would you describe your feelings as confident that there will still be a season?
I'm not confident.
Eventually, after several very public failed rounds of negotiations, Commissioner Rob Manfred imposed a 60-game season. Given the much larger issues going on in the world, the entire process came off as distasteful, but at least there would be a season. Well, we hoped anyway. The season was set to begin on July 23rd. Teams only playing within their own division and the corresponding division in the other league. New rules were put in as well. A runner at second base to start extra innings, expanded rosters, and shortly after the season began, seven-inning doubleheaders were agreed upon. And perhaps most significantly, just hours before the first pitch of the season was thrown, MLB and the Players Association agreed to expand the playoffs, increasing the number of teams from 10 to 16. With more unknowns than knowns about how all of this was going to turn out, it was time to play ball.
It's been a forgettable year for so many. Perhaps baseball will bring some sunshine into your life. The season opens tonight. On the microphone for the most unusual of openers is Dan Schulman. He's standing by with Buck Martinez. Dan, take it away.
But for one team, the biggest question of all remained. Where would they play? The Blue Jays had been in Toronto for summer camp and had hoped they would be granted permission to play their home games at Rogers Center. But shortly before the season began, despite rumors to the contrary, the federal government denied the Blue Jays the right to play in Canada because of border restrictions and fears of the Jays or their opponents spreading the virus while they were in Toronto. The Blue Jays needed a home, and fast. Pittsburgh looked like a possibility until the Pennsylvania Department of Health said no. Talks began with Baltimore over the possibility of sharing Camden Yards. But with time running out before the start of the season, the Blue Jays eventually settled on their AAA ballpark in Buffalo and got to work on making it as major league ready as possible. In the meantime, the Jays hit the road for 23 days, playing all of their games in visiting ballparks until Salem Field was ready to go.
And we are following breaking news. It has been a busy day in the world of Major League Baseball, specifically when it comes to the Marlins and coronavirus and the fallout from an outbreak in that organization. Major League Baseball now responding, explaining exactly how the next several days will go after 15 players on the Marlins tested positive. Here's the
Well, that didn't take long, did it? On the fifth day of the season, Monday, July 27th, the Marlins announced they were in the midst of a COVID outbreak. Their game with the Orioles would be postponed, as would the Phillies game with the Yankees, since the Phillies had just hosted the Marlins on the opening weekend of the season. The Blue Jays, who were supposed to go to Philadelphia the following weekend, would get caught up in this as well. The Yankees and Orioles wound up playing each other that week because they had no one else to play, and the Marlins wouldn't play for over a week. Within days, the Cardinals would have to quarantine in Milwaukee after an outbreak of their own. They wouldn't play for over 2 weeks. The season felt in jeopardy. For the teams who were able to play through it all, early season storylines were developing. The Yankees got out of the gate very quickly and looked like the team to beat in the American League. The Dodgers started strong in the National League, but both the Rockies and Padres were right there with them in the early going. The Cubs, under first-year manager David Ross, were off to a great start, while the Braves, the two-time defending NL East champs, lost one of their mainstays early to a season-ending injury.
This one hit toward Freeman. Soroka tumbles off the mound. He's still down. Mike Soroka went down in a heap, and he is limping toward the foul line. Mike Soroka tried to break toward first base, and he is on two knees on the infield grass. Oh, no.
The Blue Jays, meanwhile, seem to have the market cornered on painful losses, with seemingly every defeat being by a single run or in extra innings. And then, on the morning of August 16th, the news got worse.
Some bad news for the Blue Jays as Charlie Montoyo announced about an hour before the game. Bo Bichette felt something in his knee yesterday. He told the team about it after the game. Last night, he is gone for some tests or is having some tests in Buffalo today, and Joe Panik will take over at short for at least the remainder of this first game.
It seemed like whatever hope the Jays had had of making some noise in 2020 evaporated with the news that Bo Bichette would be out several weeks. Prior to the injury, he had been as hot as any player in the majors. He was hitting .361 and hammering the ball from line to line. That day, the Jays blew a late lead to the Rays and lost in extra innings. Their record, 7-11. Only three teams in the American League had a worse mark. Around the majors, the Marlins had gotten back on the field and were playing well. The Cardinals were still in quarantine. The Rays had closed in on the Yankees, who had run into injuries and were suddenly struggling. And the Orioles, of all teams, were starting to look like a team that perhaps could make a run at the last playoff spot, sitting at 12-9 when the Blue Jays arrived at Camden Yards August 17th. The Jays, though, would sweep Baltimore to get back within a game of the .500 mark and then head back to Buffalo for just one day to play a doubleheader with the Phillies brought on by the postponements from 2 weeks earlier. It was, in some ways, the most important day of the season for the Blue Jays.
And a chopper into left field for a base hit. Gurriel with a bouncer that goes for a single, scoring Hernandez, and the Blue Jays will walk it off in game one.
A run in the sixth to tie it, and then the Gurriel base hit to walk it off in the seventh, and the Jays were at .500. A win in the second game would put them over the .500 mark, but soon after the game began, that didn't look possible.
Yeah, that one's hit down the right field line. Going back on it is Hernandez. He got all turned around. It's over his head. And a one hop off the base of the wall. This may clear the bases. McCutchen pulls in for an extra base hit at second base. It does clear him. The Phils have busted it open here in the top of the first inning.
Hey, Andrew, how'd you do in the first? Well, it's 2-for-2 with three RBIs. Is that good?
The Jays were down 7 before they ever came to bat, and still trailed 7-2 when they came up in the bottom of the sixth.
That's rocketed down the right field line, screaming towards the fence and off towards the WestJet flight deck, and long gone. Rowdy Tellez wastes absolute no time teeing off in this sixth inning.
Gurriel gets into one and sends it a long way to left field, and this is going to go. All of a sudden, it's a one-run ball game.
Biggio on at third, Grichuk on at second. The pitch to Rowdy, swinging a line drive, sinking in the air to center field, down for a base hit. Here comes Biggio. Grichuk's on his way to the plate. He'll beat the throw. Two-run base hit from Rowdy Tellez. It's an inning of all innings. After spotting the Phils seven in the first, the Blue Jays have seven in the sixth.
It was a miraculous comeback. The Jays would beat the Rays the next day, too, to extend their winning streak to six. The trade deadline was suddenly just 10 days away. The next morning, the Dodgers woke up with the best record in baseball at 18-7. This despite the fact that David Price had opted out of the season, and both Max Muncy and 2019 National League MVP Cody Bellinger were both hitting under 200. They had created some separation between themselves and the rest of the teams in the National League West. But suddenly, things got very noisy down in San Diego.
In the air to right field, towards the corner, it's back, it's gone! Welcome to Slam Diego! Grand slam for Eric Hosmer! For the first time in Major League history, a team has hit a grand slam in four consecutive games, and that team is the San Diego Padres!
All of a sudden, Slam Diego was the talk of the sport. Fernando Tatis was getting mentioned as one of the best players in the game, and the Padres set their sights on toppling the most powerful team in baseball. Back in the American League, the Yankees were in the midst of a 5-15 stretch that saw them get overtaken by the Rays for top spot in the East. Minnesota, Cleveland, and the White Sox were in a three-way battle for the lead in the Central, and Oakland had established itself as the class of the West. And just a few days later, August 31st, the trade deadline arrived.
The San Diego Padres, they're kind of skiing down Black Diamond. Everyone else is just getting off the bunny slope. Like, they have made this their trade deadline. This is A.J. Preller's world, and everyone else is kind of observing. They have now
the Padres made by far the biggest splash, making six trades, acquiring eight players for their Major League roster, including pitchers Mike Clevinger and Trevor Rosenthal.
Ben, we just got off of a Zoom call with Blue Jays GM Ross Atkins, who obviously was very excited to be adding an athlete of Walker's caliber to his pitching staff and his rotation going forward as the Blue Jays try to qualify for the MLB postseason. But actually,
the Blue Jays acquired five players, including Taijuan Walker and Robbie Ray. Some contenders, though, including the Dodgers, Yankees, and Braves, did little or nothing, preferring to stay the course. Only 4 weeks remained in the season.
Oh, look out there. 101 up around the head. And Brasso can't be very pleased with that.
Well, you know, again, look.
I mean, it becomes a matter of survival at some point.
You want the guys in that Rays dugout to answer this garbage.
The Yankees and Rays had disliked each other for a couple of years, each team feeling the other through inside too often. It boiled over on September the 1st. When Aroldis Chapman threw a 101-mile-an-hour fastball at the head of Mike Brasso, who miraculously managed to get out of the way of it. Benches cleared, and harsh words were exchanged after the fact.
You, other than the 3 years ago, there hasn't been one pitch thrown with intent from any of our guys, period. Somebody's got to be accountable, and the last thing I'll say on it is I got a whole damn stable full of guys that throw 98 miles an hour, period.
The next day, the Rays would get a measure of revenge as Brasso would hit two home runs, leading the Rays to a win. But bigger moments between these two teams would lie ahead. The Yankees had lost 13 of 18 when they arrived in Buffalo September the 7th for their first meeting of the season with the Blue Jays. Each team had already played 40 of its 60 games, but in a quirk of the schedule, they had yet to face one another. In the first game of the series, the Yankees scored five runs off Hyunjin Ryu and led 6-2 going to the bottom of the sixth when the Blue Jays would put up one of the biggest innings in franchise history.
And a drive! Left center field! Gone! Danny Jensen clears the bases, and it's a 10-run inning for the Blue Jays.
So much for the Blue Jays being intimidated by the Yankees.
A 10-run inning and a 12-7 win. The Jays would take the first two from the Yankees, briefly moving three games ahead of them in the standings, before the Yankees would win the final game of the series. League-wide, the White Sox were now the hottest team in baseball. They had a lineup full of young, powerful hitters who looked like they were having the time of their lives every day. The Astros were floundering, having lost six in a row, to fall back to the 500 mark, giving their critics plenty of material with which to work. And the Rays called up a young outfielder by the name of Randy Arozarena, whom they had acquired in an offseason deal with the Cardinals and who had been sidelined for the first month of the season after testing positive for the coronavirus. In his fourth start with the club, he would hit two home runs to lead them to a victory over the Marlins. A week later, the Blue Jays and Yankees would meet again, this time in the Bronx, and things would go much differently.
High fly ball, deep left center. There it goes! How about five? See ya! A home run for Gleyber Torres. The Bronx Bombers are flexing. 9-2 Yankees.
The Yankees scored 43 runs in the three-game series and hit 19 home runs, a major league record, as they overtook the Blue Jays for second place in the AL East. The Jays' losing streak would eventually stretch to six, dropping them all the way back to the 500 mark, with just over a week to go in the season. In the National League, the Dodgers were hot. Clayton Kershaw was pitching extremely well. Cody Bellinger was now hitting. There were concerns, however, about Kenley Jansen after an awful outing against Houston in mid-September. People began to wonder who would close games for the Dodgers in the playoffs. The Braves, meanwhile, were getting an improbable push from the Marlins for top spot in the NL East. Don Mattingly's club had survived the loss of 18 players during their COVID outbreak and looked to be in good shape for at least a wild card spot. While fans wondered if the Braves had enough starting pitching to hold them off, and even if they did, expressed concern over their ability to have a deep run in the postseason. On the final day of the season, there were still things to be decided. Four National League teams, the Phillies, Cardinals, Brewers, and Giants, were fighting for the last two playoff spots. In the AL, the eight playoff teams had been decided, but seeding was still up in the air. When the dust had settled, the Cardinals and Brewers were in the NL. The Twins claimed the AL Central crown, and by virtue of a Blue Jay loss to Baltimore, the Yankees clinched the five seed, relegating the Blue Jays to the eight seed and a first-round matchup with Tampa Bay.
Another high fastball and a strikeout. Biggio strikes out for a second time. That's five for Blake Snell. Still no score.
Blake Snell brought his good stuff in the series opener, but in a bit of foreshadowing, would be lifted in the sixth inning despite having thrown incredibly well. In game two, the Rays would turn it up offensively.
Are you ready in the 1-1? There's a swing and a high fly ball down the left field line, headed towards the corner, and gone! The Tampa Bay Rays clock a grand slam off of Ryu.
Hunter Renfro's grand slam off Hyunjin Ryu would stake the Rays to a huge lead, one they wouldn't relinquish. The young Blue Jays had overcome numerous injuries to make it into the postseason, but their time there was brief. Progress had been made, though, and high hopes exist for the future. Elsewhere in the wildcard round, Atlanta shut out Cincinnati twice in a row to sweep that series. The Yankees would mount a wild comeback in Game 2 to knock out Cleveland, and the Padres would need a third and deciding game to eliminate the Cardinals, setting the stage for a showdown with the Dodgers.
He sticks with a fastball and strikes him out. Big strikeout for Walker Buehler, two gone here in the second. There they go. Here it comes. He struck him out, sticking with a fastball. They had the bases loaded with one out. Back-to-back strikeouts on high 90s cheese from Buehler.
Walker Buehler got the start in Game 1 for L.A. as he had the round before. Clayton Kershaw, who had pitched brilliantly in his start in the wildcard round, would start Game 2 and record the victory, helping the Dodgers sweep the Padres in three straight. In the AL meantime, the Rays met up with the Yankees. Tampa Bay had won 8 of 10 from New York during the regular season, but this series appeared to be an even match between what looked like the league's two best teams. The Yankees hit four home runs in Game 1, three of them off Blake Snell, to win 9-3, before making the controversial decision to use rookie starter Davey Garcia as an opener in Game 2, then turning to Jay Happ. Happ did not pitch well. The Rays won 7-5 and evened up the series. Randy Arozarena homered to lead the Rays to a win in Game 3 before the Yankees evened it up in Game 4, setting the stage for a thrilling fifth and deciding game.
I mean, this is some grade-A stuff we are seeing here in the second inning from Gerrit Cole. 1-2, swing and a miss. A great slider there at 90 just off the outside corner, and Gerrit Cole just struck out the side.
Gerrit Cole was pitching on 3 days rest for the first time in his career, but he gave up just one run while striking out 9 in 5 1/3. The Rays were mixing and matching, and the game was tied 1-1 going to the bottom of the eighth when Aroldis Chapman and Mike Brasso would meet again.
He destroyed left-handed pitchers. Chapman, no regular lefty.
3-2, Brasso sends one into left field. Gardner going back, and it is up! Have a 2-1 lead.
For the second year in a row, Aroldis Chapman would throw the pitch that would effectively send the Yankees home. For the Rays, it was on to the ALCS.
Former Padre playing for the Rays, and he sends one to center field, hit well on the run. Springer, he's at the track, and this ball is going to be gone. Manuel Margot, a 3-run shot in the first inning.
The Rays looked like they would cruise past the 29-31 Astros in the ALCS, winning the first three games. Their defense was off the charts. The Astros were hitting the ball harder than the Rays, but had nothing to show for it. Lady Luck, though, would eventually smile on the Astros as some bloops started falling and the vaunted Rays bullpen began to show some cracks. Still, after three Tampa Bay losses forced to Game 7, the hottest hitter on the planet took matters into his own hands.
2 to Arozarena, and a fastball line to right center field. He's given it a ride, and he's hit it out. Randy Arozarena does it again.
And Charlie Morton won another winner-take-all game, and it was on to the World Series for Tampa Bay for the second time in franchise history. In the NL, the Dodgers would meet up with the Braves in the championship series. And to the surprise of just about everyone, Atlanta bolted out to a 3-1 lead. But the Dodgers would fight back behind two home runs from Corey Seager in Game 5, a great performance from Walker Buehler in Game 6, and then, somewhat surprisingly, Dave Roberts gave the ball to a young lefty for the last nine outs of Game 7.
Towering fly ball. The Dodgers come from behind in the series. They come from behind in Game 7, and they win the National League pennant.
And the Dodgers advance to the World Series for the third time in the past 4 years.
So the World Series was set. The Dodgers, who had the second highest payroll in the sport, against the Rays, who had the third lowest.
The 0-2 pitch on the way, swing and a miss. Great down and in slider there from Kershaw, and he has it rolling right now.
The Clayton Kershaw narrative just wouldn't go away. Did he need to pitch well and to win a World Series to cement his legacy as one of the greatest pitchers of all time? He took a big step in that direction in Game 1 with six outstanding innings, allowing just one run and striking out 8. The Dodgers would go on to win 8-3.
Gonsolin on the far first base side of the rubber, and Lau sends a ball the other way. Well hit and gone! And maybe that's the start of Brandon Lau snapping out of it. 0-2 pitch to Lau, hit well the other way once again. Pollock is back, and that one is gone!
That's the kind of power we have seen during the regular season from Brandon Lau.
In Game 2, the slumping Brandon Lau, Tampa Bay's best hitter, who had struggled throughout the postseason, broke out in a big way as the Rays won 6-4 to even up the series. In Game 3, it was time for Walker Buehler to add another chapter to his developing story as one of the best postseason pitchers in recent memory.
2-2, swing and a miss, got him with a curveball. And that is 10 strikeouts through six terrific innings for Walker Buehler.
Buehler would allow just one run in six innings, striking out 10, and the Dodgers had a 2-1 lead. One thing we've all come to know about these Rays, though, they are resilient. Game four was utter madness. The Dodgers led, but couldn't pull away. They kept scoring, and the Rays kept answering. Back and forth they went, until finally the Rays, with some help, found a way to win in the bottom of the ninth.
Two pitch. And Phillips has cashed in! A base hit back up the middle! Here's Kiermaier to score! The ball's mishandled! And now they've got a Rosarena to run down! A Rosarena scores, and the Rays have won the game! Santa Maria!
So now with the series tied 2-2, it was Kershaw's turn again. But instead of the story being how he could potentially clinch the championship for the Dodgers, now suddenly the narrative reverted to him needing to pitch well. Otherwise, the Dodgers would fall behind in the series. And pitch well he did.
The 1-2, swing and a miss, got him on a fastball up and in. And that is a new record. He tied it last inning and he breaks it right now. 206 strikeouts in the postseason for Clayton Kershaw, surpassing Justin Verlander, and Kershaw just threw the ball out of play.
Kershaw went 5 2/3, allowing two runs, leading the Dodgers to a 4-2 win, and leaving them one win away from their first World Series championship in 32 years.
Here's the matchup on paper. Blake Snell, Tony Gonsolin. Dodgers starting pitching as a whole has held up much better than the Rays. A 2.66 Dodgers starters ERA, Tampa's three times higher than that. Can't wait for game six when we come back.
Blake Snell knew what was at stake. He had to pitch well to force a seventh game. And did he ever?
Just missed as he tied up Turner inside.
We've seen all four of his pitches in the first inning, and he's thrown them all well. This is another slider. He thought it caught the inside corner, didn't get the call.
You know, Blake Snell is the only Rays starter to have retired Dodgers in order even once.
It was vintage Snell, 2018 Cy Young Award winning Snell. He was throwing hard, he was throwing strikes, and the Dodgers had no chance against him.
3-2, swing and a miss, another fastball. And for the second time tonight, Blake Snell has struck out the side, and he's done it against the best hitters the Dodgers have. Both times.
The Rays had taken an early 1-0 lead on a home run by, who else, Randy Arozarena. And now the question was, how long would Snell stay in the game? He entered the bottom of the sixth having thrown only 69 pitches. After getting A.J. Pollock to pop up, Snell gave up a base hit to Austin Barnes. And with leadoff hitter Mookie Betts due up next, Kevin Cash made his move. Snell, after 73 pitches, having allowed only two hits, having struck out nine, was lifted from the game. He would not be allowed to see the top of the Dodger lineup a third time.
And this one gets by Zunino. Tie game.
Slider. It went the wrong way. And when it goes the wrong way, the catcher cannot be in that position.
The wheels fell off almost immediately. Nick Anderson, so good during the season, but not nearly as effective in the playoffs, gave up a double to Betts, a wild pitch to tie the game, and then Betts raced home on a groundout, and the Dodgers had the lead. Betts would add a home run in the eighth, and then once again, it would be Julio Urias who would be asked to clinch a series for the Dodgers.
And that'll do it! The Los Angeles Dodgers have put their postseason demons to bed. They will hoist the Commissioner's Trophy for the first time since 1988. And yes, the team that was the best in baseball during the regular season has won the World Series.
After 32 years, the names of Gibson and Hershiser would now be joined by the likes of Seager, Betts, and of course, Kershaw. But this being 2020, it would not come without the unexpected and the bizarre.
In light of the Dodgers winning the World Series, we get the news that Justin Turner tests positive for COVID. Can you run us through the timeline there? Because it is strange.
Carl, for 59 days, Major League Baseball had not had a positive test by a player. And in the second inning of Game 6 of what ultimately ended up being the final baseball game in 2020, Major League Baseball got a call from the lab that runs the test for it, saying that Justin Turner had inconclusive results from yesterday's test and the tests from today had just arrived. Once those tests were run, Turner's test came back positive. Major League Baseball called the Los Angeles Dodgers. Word came down to the dugout to get Justin Turner out of the game now, and by the eighth inning, he was pulled from the game.
Justin Turner was removed from the game in the eighth inning after Major League Baseball learned he had tested positive for COVID. He then defied a request to remain isolated and returned to the field for the postgame celebration, even removing his mask at times for pictures. MLB says it will conduct an investigation. I guess it is fitting that a season that might never have started because of the virus should be impacted by the virus when it was at its ultimate moment. The 2020 baseball season made it to the finish line, barely. A champion was crowned, legacies were cemented, and new stars emerged. What awaits the sport and all of us in 2021 is anyone's guess. That'll do it for this episode and for this season of A Swing and a Bell. We'll put it to bed for the winter as I focus on college basketball, and we'll plan on bringing it back next season, hopefully for a full 162 games. Many thanks to Christian Ryan and Amal Delich for producing Swing all season, and most of all, to you for listening. Stay safe, and let's plan on doing it again in the spring.